Yeah, I talk about, you know, feminism, and are you doing it? Are you even doing it?
Is the film doing it? That's what we'll find out today.
And I'm Miss Flo. And we're the ghouls next door.
The ghouls next door.
The housewives next door.
Yeah, as a good wife, I speak as an octave higher than I would normally.
Oh, welcome home, ghoul scouts.
Yeah.
We will greet you.
It's to increase aggression in my spouse.
Yes.
And other men in the area.
We'll greet you with your favorite drink and do all the things that you like. But actually, this is all for women pleasure. Welcome to The Ghouls Next Door. We are the media literacy show from a horror lens where we talk spooky stuff that influences our cinematic fears. And today we're talking about maybe the patriarchy?
Yeah. In my section, I'm like, capitalism,
for
patriarchy.
Sure.
What is love even under those two things? Does it exist? The answers will be here for you to observe.
On The Ghouls.
Yeah,
I talk about, you know, feminism, and are you doing it? Are you even doing it?
Is the film doing it? That's what we'll find out today.
And welcome to the new year. It is 2024. It is new year, new us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kicking off a new series, and we are somewhat getting back to our old ways in having our facts in our film section. So any newbies who showed up during our more lax months, get ready. We're going to teach you stuff. We're going to have more like well-rounded things to say.
Yeah. Sorry if you like that better. This is what we had been doing for like 5 years.
So yeah.
We're going back
this
to
is what
it.
We've been doing since.
Like this film, we are putting on smart face and airs.
Yes.
You know, as the ladies.
Yeah, and today we're going to be talking about Don't Worry, Darling, by Olivia Wilde, starring Florence Pugh. And it's a fun time. And I will preface this episode by saying I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I don't hate it.
It's fine.
There were parts that I thought were somewhat fun. I thought there was some interesting cinematic moments. A lot of energy went into pieces of this film.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think if you think about it too long and you focus in on certain things, then you would be like, oh, I didn't like this movie. But if you're just like, movie, it's not bad.
Yeah. If you came for answers or something, it's not going to be a good time. But if you're just like sitting there because you just love Florence and how she works, then you're good. Because she's amazing.
More like multitask while you watch it. Yeah. Very great.
Yeah. I will say this film, it was really sad when we was doing a lot of research, and the majority of the commentary and discussions around it are all outside of the film. It's all the drama that was happening around the film outside of it. So like some drama between Wilde and Miss Flo. There is the fact that Wilde cheated on her husband and ended up with Harry, and that there was just like the cast apparently just didn't really get along or something. There was a lot of different politics around it, I remember, when it was first coming out. And it sadly is dominating the conversation a lot of the time. And then when we actually do get to talking about the film, it's like, ew. It could have been better. It felt like a first draft, and it felt like privilege to fail, in a way that not a lot of people get. And I think her name gave her that safety to be able to kind of be up her own ass about it. She was like, I'm doing something. I'm changing the world. Just like, which is funny because that's like what the characters are saying. And it's very clear that like, yeah, they're changing the world, but not for the better. And she's
for a very specific outcome. Yeah, very much. And I think it's kind of funny, honestly, that the people in the film didn't get along at all, but had to pretend the entire time they do. Because isn't that just a perfect representation of what suburbia is?
Yeah.
Putting on airs. And that's what it was.
Yeah.
To be on the set, I guess, as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It must have been. It's, I think, aesthetically was really fun. You know, I love Mad Men. I love Stepford Wives. And I love Fallout. So, like the same soundtrack. Any film that plays Oogum Boogum is up there.
Yeah.
So there's one for listeners. It's one of my favorite songs ever.
Yeah.
That's a special place in my heart. So for it to have that is great. But why don't we dive in? Because we have quite the show for you today. Again, didn't hate, didn't loathe the film.
Yeah.
Just didn't love it.
So yeah, I enjoyed parts.
Yeah,
exactly.
But I'm gonna put on my media analysis glasses and they say, whew, what a mess. So, Don't Worry, Darling is from 2022, and it's about, while her husband leaves home every day to work in a top-secret facility, a young 1950s housewife begins to question her life when she notices strange behavior from the other wives in the neighborhood. It's directed by Olivia Wilde. This is her second directorial debut situation, I think that I saw somewhere. Cool. That's great. Love that for her. Let's explore what this film is. I will say that this episode will contain spoilers because I do want to talk about the twist. I think there are things to be said. Like, because the twist, it really influences how you feel about the film. Because if you went the majority of the film and you didn't get the twist, you could kind of make up your own ending and maybe it was better. Maybe you can make sense of the world better than what that ending did. But also, I will say, I watched this film twice. So I watched it once on my own because I was like, I want to see what the hubbub's about. And then I watched it for the ghouls. And watching it the second time, knowing what the twist is, was pretty fun. Because you catch things. So that was really fun. So I recommend that if you can stomach it a second time, maybe watch it with some folks who are all in on the joke maybe. And then it might be a little more fun. You know,
yeah, you can just like pick up on some of the more social cues that are happening subtly in the background.
There's a lot of it's the dialogue for me. There's a lot of language. There's a lot of word choice. And I was like, oh, okay.
I see what you did there. Yeah.
And go ahead. Have a Don't Worry, Darling party, like themed party. All right. You did it with Great Gatsby. You did it with any other inappropriate thing like Squid Game. You can do it with Don't Worry, Darling. And what a vibe.
Yeah.
I'm here for it. Invite me. So here is a good rundown, a summary of what happens in the film. And then I'll warn you when we get to the twist. But Alice and Jack are in perfect love. And
absolutely,
they live in this.
Sure. Sorry, I'm just agreeing with you.
They are in perfect love, okay? And they live in the idyllic suburban desert wonderland known as Victory. This is kind of scary. That already is like warning bells. I don't know why. Jack works for the mysterious, undefined Victory Project, of which this little suburbs is named, while Alice maintains their perfect home. She makes him breakfast in the morning and sees him off with a sweet kiss on the cheek, waving goodbye as Jack leaves in his fancy car, along with every other man who lives in Victory, as they drive off into the nothingness of the desert to somewhere. There's no roads. They drive into the desert with purpose.
Yeah, like how is there not more accidents is what I want to know, because like they really are just like zigzagging in nothingness.
They just
like,
vibing,
what do you mean?
Dude, they love it, which is, you think they'd be more careful because there's danger to them. Anyway, yeah. They're going to do some seemingly important and oh-so top-secret things for the Victory Project at headquarters, yeah. Which we are told numerous times is dangerous. They're keeping us safe. It is safe in town, so don't go over there. Only the men are strong enough to go over there in the cars.
Yeah, classic industry town. Love it.
Yes, I was sad that there wasn't more about industry towns, but there's only so much you can do. Yeah. So Alice spends her days lavishing in luxury. She takes the charming trolley to the town with her fellow housewives and besties. They window shop and charge their husbands' cards, and they dance in perfect unison during ballet class. And when her day of fun is wrapped, she cooks a several course meal and meets her husband at the door with his favorite drink. And romance. They have intercourse, kind of. There's no penetration involved, just so folks know. But it's like, it's supposed to be hot. It felt really uncomfortable, but it's supposed to be hot. Yeah. And as you can imagine, all is not well in Victory. Something sinister is afoot. And when Alice notices the slow descent into instability of former friends and only Black woman in the film, Margaret, things start to become increasingly bizarre. So the film leans heavily on the charm and nostalgia of the Mad Men, Stepford Wives surrealism, inspiring a seemingly obvious commentary of the era of nuclear families and casserole. It oscillates between 40s, 50s, 60s inspiration, from like the music choice to like the appliances that they have. It's like modern, but not.
Yeah.
One guy raves about having a record player. And he's like, oh, this one's so cool.
I think it's like the version of America that like crazy people, excuse me, will say when they're like, make America great again.
It's
that.
For sure. And it's very specifically the America that was polished up and wrapped in like a nostalgia bow. It's one of the eras that is like heavily nostalgia. Like,
yeah,
rose colored glasses. It's a world
riddled
that
with actual like suicide and drug use and alcoholism,
poverty,
like no one was okay.
Mental unhealth, like there's so like it's rampant
with and none of that's there,
no, and that's not what we're allowed to remember, right? Yeah. Instead, we remember capitalism, right? We remember selling things, we remember, status and this idea of like the modern family and what it's supposed to be and the fulfilling of roles that were put upon you. One of my all-time favorite films ever is Pleasantville, which does this so well. So highly recommend if that's something that you're into or maybe you haven't seen it. I love Pleasantville. Live for it. But as much as this film is, it has a lot of potential because it is inspired by these different nostalgia heavy eras that, as you're just saying, is so cloaked in this like safety bubble of like, remember when things were perfect? And they weren't, they weren't. But
they
it doesn't
really
do any conversation. Like there's no conversations about that. It's just like, look how pretty it was. And that's what we're doing. We just like are, you know, marketing off of how pretty it was and neglecting all of the lead poisoning. So throughout Alice's mundane existence and the slow realization of something being off, we catch glimpses of a haunting dance scene. So Wilde edits in these moments of the surreal dance routines, like in black and white, to create this feeling of unease for viewers. That like is jarring and allows you to never really feel safe and certain about what's happening at Victory. Which I mean, personally, I think it would have been fun to believe it for a little bit, but it's like right out the gate that like something's awry. I was like, okay, what is it? And so this like haunting dance scene is one in direct opposition to the uniformed, graceful movement of the wives in class. This one is staggered and a canary to things being wrong. And after Alice witnesses the attempted suicide of Margaret, again, the only Black woman in this film, and the first death, quotations, because we don't know if she dies. This is a woman she and the otherwise have dismissed as crazy, hysterical, and worthy of dismissal. so easily. There's very little compassion towards Margaret. And the thing about it is that Margaret had sensed something was wrong. She had taken things into her own hands to prove that, and it caused her great pain, the loss of her son and the trust of her community. And so she was the first one to be like, something ain't right here, and was doing something. And the way that they try to, the whoever's in charge are trying to silence her, they didn't even have to work that hard. Everyone already was there. Because, like, she was threatening their way of life by saying something.
And they were like, go away immediately. Like, it sounded like she just started acting weird one day, and they're like, all right, we never talk to them again. No forgiveness for them ever.
Yeah. Just like, wild. No compassion, no understanding. And after Alice witnesses a plane crash with a plane that resembles very similarly the toy plane that Margaret's son had been playing with in a desert before he went missing, Alice finds herself in the desert too, seeking answers. And what she finds is more questions and her own dose of gaslighting, because now it's her turn. So Margaret, thinking she could trust in Alice, isn't she too becoming aware of the problems in this society, only to be shunned and reprimanded by Alice, who is trying to uphold the status quo. And even after her attempted suicide, presumed death, she is dismissed, forgotten, and overwritten. And now that Alice knows something is up, she's the chosen one. Now it's a problem.
Yep, because it's a problem for her specifically.
Yes. which I will get into when we talk about the themes. But just so you know what's going on. So Margaret's death, or Oma's death, is mixed with bizarre glitch in the Matrix moments, like Alice finding an egg in her carton to be nothing but a husk, or her being smushed between a pane of glass and her walls in a vivid, suffocating daydream, which was awful. I was like, what? It's like really cool. I did really enjoy just like that cinematography moment of her like scratching at the thing and then it squishes her. Cool.
I guess it like is like a nod to what happens as the twist.
I mean, it's suffocating, right? And it's these weird glitch of the Matrix things, right? Something isn't right, and specifically something isn't right with Alice, right? Something's happening to her reality, which is, you know, related to gaslighting, right?
Yeah.
So this paves the way for Alice to begin digging into the truth of victory. And she begins confronting anyone and everyone, crying out to be heard, only to be met with more gaslighting and the occasional, you're being hysterical. He literally says that, which is a phrase that, like, we shouldn't use anymore, because who does? Like, just because your film is supposed to take place in the 60s, doesn't mean you have to write like it is.
Yeah.
I was like, that was so, it just felt so on the nose. Like, and not in a fun way. Like, it's almost like they're saying, like, don't gaslight me. Which is not funny unless it's in Bodies, 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 when it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Call a spade a spade. So, what is actually happening at Victory? We're all dying to know. What's the meaning of the plane? Why was her egg empty? Why did the cult-like leader, Frank, who somehow finds time to not only run an important life-changing company and community, but also star in both radio and TV programs all day, get off on watching Alice and her husband have relations in his room? What a weird scene. Honestly, what's his obsession with her?
He says, I don't know why we needed it. It was really weird.
It's super weird, and it didn't do anything. He's like, I thought you would challenge me. And then she does, and he's mad about it.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. So what's the deal with the other woman? Great news. You can watch this whole film and never get a single answer. In fact, you'll have more questions.
Woo!
Because it's twist time, baby. So if you want to wait for the twist, why don't you go watch a film? It's on Netflix.
And come back.
And come back to this moment in time. And starting now, we will do our twist. You can also skip ahead to Cat section if you like, but I'll be talking about stuff. So the big reveal of Don't Worry, Darling is on the surface interesting. I think it is fun. As a short film or even a short story, I think it would have been brilliant. I would have had a good time because you wouldn't have had to do so much fluff. It could have been nice and concise. And even as a Reddit post, it could have been brilliant. So for a film so reminiscent of Stepford Wives, I enjoyed the twist being different than I expected. And watching a second time and knowing that twist, it really had me paying attention to subtle dialogue choices. Like, there's this moment where Frank, who's like the leader of Victory, and he has this big speech and he says, wouldn't you want to run? And he stops and like, as if it's a full sentence, but then he keeps going and says something like, away from your mundane life or whatever, like twist it, but he's like, don't you want to run? And then there's another time where they're trying to remind Alice of her friends, and Bunny says like, oh, you know her, she's always pregnant. And I was like, yeah, because she's like stuck in perpetuity as a pregnant person. So there's like, there's just stuff that I notice the second time watching that was cool. But boy, did this twist muck it all up. So Alice isn't a housewife. She's actually a surgeon. Okay.
Yep.
An important human being. Not that housewives are not important. I'll say that, right? But she's a surgeon. She's saving lives. Yeah, okay.
It's a big job.
She and Jack had been in love, actually, which is more than we can say about some of the other wives here. And after he lost his job, Alice took on more shifts because she cares about them. And she's like, whatever. I love, like, I'm going to work my butt off to provide for us. And because I love caring for people outside of the simulation. And so Jack falls victim to a toxic masculinity and incel podcast, of which there are so many.
So many.
Though Frank is fashioned after Jordan Peterson, which is a disgusting, pathetic man. And Olivia Wilde said in an interview with Maggie Gyllenhaal, we base that character on this insane man, Jordan Peterson, who's this pseudo-intellectual hero to the incel community. And then Wilde had to explain to Gyllenhaal, Maggie Gyllenhaal, what an incel was, because bless her heart, she doesn't know. Which refers, which means involuntarily celibate, basically disenfranchised, mostly white men who believe they're entitled to sex from women. It's like the good guy times a bajillion, even worse than that. They don't even think they have to be good. They literally just think their existence.
Yeah, they're just like, I am owed sex because I'm better.
Because I'm a man.
And I'm insecure because I'm not better. And that motivates violence.
Yeah. I'll say I've never listened or read or partaken in anything Jordan Peterson has said. So the influence is a little lost on me. Like, I got the gist of what kind of man he was without knowing who Jordan Peterson is. But I'll say Frank was an interesting character, if not kind of lost. And that's not to say anything about the acting of it. I think it was written that way. And he's supposed to be this, like, mystical, undefined being that's just all powerful, but then he wasn't powerful at all.
I will say, well, it's like the cult leader, right? But like, not with the everyone having to be with him time
for sure. Except it seemed like I was gonna get there. And I think the having him on the TV and radio is important, because there is like, that's a tactic in cults to infiltrate like every waking moment of your life with the voice of like the leader, or like the words of the leader. Jim Jones did that. He would broadcast all day. So that's absolutely believable. And then, I think the facade of being so powerful, and also like, it's definitely culty, and like the way that his wife is like, he's brilliant. Everyone's like, oh my God, he's the most brilliant, like incredibly intelligent, remarkable human being. It was so uncomfortable every time they said that.
And I mean, like, all the other men too are like his enforcers without like being told that they need to do that, like, because they are hoping for some sort of power themselves. And that's also very much like, or they don't want to be disowned by this new world that they feel connected to either, which is super cool to you.
Because Frank, the Very Real Monster podcaster, informs his listeners of a new project which can transport you in the woman of your choosing. I will say that, of your choosing. She doesn't do choose. She has no choice. And a woman, you as a strong, powerful, and deserving man are owed. And we can bring you to this idyllic simulation of victory. So this is where we get the plot that is like Swiss cheese. It's full of holes. Because this is where it gets super sticky and mucked up. So Jack, so essentially the whole thing is that victory is a simulation. And Alice is in that. So she had been really cool, and now she's been essentially brainwashed, Clockwork Orange style, to be an obedient housewife in this simulation. But the way that it works is where things get really sloppy. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't hold up under a microscope. So Jack, now with a job, like outside of the simulation, he has a job now that he didn't have before. Because that was the whole problem. That he couldn't get a job, but now he's got one, and it's enough. It's a job that can afford him access to an advanced technology like this. It has to be a lot, and he's slaving away, right? He also takes full responsibility for Alice's life and care, like well-being, and is only allowed in the simulation for a certain amount of time, which is why all the men leave in the morning to go to work. That's the time they're allotted, which honestly I think him having to afford her like being in there would have been enough explanation for why he leaves. I think it's weird that they're like, you're only allowed in here sometimes. Why? Yeah.
I guess it's like, if the job is to like make sure that their body is not atrophying outside of the simulation. But that's not what his job is.
He leaves. It's not.
He has to go somewhere else. That doesn't make sense. Yeah,
he's like, I go to work and I hate it. Hate it. And I'm doing that because I want to be with you in here. So he leaves. That's one of the other big problems, right? Is that he leaves. No one asks about her. She's gone. She just disappears. Where's her family, her friends, her coworkers, right? If Alice does awaken in the end, because it's kind of like, it's insinuated that she wakes up. We hear her, an intake of breath, but she could be waking up in the simulation, or she could be waking up outside the simulation. Yeah. If she does wake up, in the real world, her body is definitely atrophied and full of bed sores. So there's no way she'd be able to leave before the victory people come and get to silence her.
Yeah.
They're on the way. Regardless of Frank, like Frank isn't the only one who's operating this thing. That's not how technology works. There's a whole team, and there has to be some security behind it. There's just like, and it's not just in the system. You didn't abduct all these people.
Well, that's what like the people in the red jackets are, is that like, their backup, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they have to exist in the real world.
I saw them as code. I saw them as not real. Because
that's fair.
They're always where they need to be. In a weird different way that I think. I think the trolley driver was also code, if I'm being honest. Mm. That's why he was so much like, I can't go over there.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
It's like, I'm only allowed to be here.
Yeah. And then like you're within your coding aren't allowed to actually communicate that in a different way.
Yeah.
But then you also have to wonder, why did the glitches happen in the first place? Because like, why was the plane the same as Margaret's son? Is Frank just really bad at developing code? Did he make those problems for Alice, like as a toy? And why?
And I guess like as a control thing. I don't know. It's very weird.
But like,
as
why? You said, so cheese. She was fine. So things are starting to look off before she even did because the whole thing is that when she sees the airplane go down and she goes into the desert, she goes to headquarters, which is where they leave. They touch a thing and they leave the simulation. The husbands do. So she left the simulation, but Jack was there to put her back under. So the problem is she kills Jack in this last bit of time. And in murdering him, that's the panic, is that they're like, no one can put her back in.
Yeah.
So if she wakes up, she's going to like, what? What's going to go on? So things are happening that led her to that. Led her to woke up, because I was like, oh, maybe if she woke up one time, or maybe Jack did something outside of the simulation, like him singing the song, it would inspire her to start glitching. But it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Like, why is there all these glitches? And all these questions aside, the ending is lackluster and ultimately disappointing. It provides an answer without showing its work. Because it showed us all this stuff that didn't matter, right? As viewers, we never feel the relief of understanding, of watching the film play back and knowing now why those things occurred. Right. I think of Saw, like when you have the music playing and then, you know, you have Danny Glover looking back on the history of the film and seeing like, oh, that's who that was. That's what that was. We don't get that moment. We don't have that relief moment of knowing what this whole film was. All of those things were red herrings or just inconsequential. That she fell upon, right? The plane isn't answered, the egg isn't answered, the glass isn't answered, the dancing isn't answered. It's so weird.
Which is like, flaws in the code, I guess, is what they're trying to write it off as. Or even just like our brain's sensory responses, which wouldn't happen if you're in a simulation. Same way they would in real world.
Yeah.
So, because like you could argue like PTSD or whatever, like your brain picks up on sensory cues.
Right.
That's super valid. Your memory is haphazard through that. But in a simulation, you're not actually experiencing those sensory cues. So like it wouldn't make sense other than the auditorial ones. It wouldn't make sense for those to trigger memories.
Yeah, like it has to be like within the code of some sort. Like it just seems odd. And so, like, after you've watched this whole film and you watch this twist, and to have the answer to the dread that was building for audience and Alice alike to be so lackluster, it's really disappointing. And I was actually reminded of the story of the lamp, which is the story told by a Redditor. I'm sorry, I don't remember, other than, like, the story stuck with me. But it's the story of a Redditor who lived an entire life after an altercation, only to one day wake up and find something off about his lamp. He's like, something is wrong with this lamp, and he can't figure it out. And he ends up neglecting like life to stare at this lamp and try to figure it out. And ultimately what he discovers and decides upon is that the lamp isn't real. And once he figures that out, nothing is real. And he wakes up from a coma. And that to me is like, oh my gosh, like you just lived like a whole other life somewhere. So like, I think that would have been cool if those little things, like the song is a great reveal because she has a song stuck in her head that she sings all the time. And they're like, was that a lullaby? And it's a song that he sang for her and that he would sing outside when he was cleaning her up the times when he was home and not in the simulation. Yeah. So like that was cute, but all the other stuff didn't make sense. Like it would have been cool to have those tie-ins to like what's happening outside and how it's impacting her, or to even know anything about the code.
Yeah.
Super weird. So in fact, sorry, I got so lost in my thing. This twist in a short Reddit thread is far more compelling and emotional than the revealing moment offered by Wilde. It's a sad gotcha moment that leaves us more confused than satisfied. And that is really only the first of many issues that I have with this film. That lackluster part is like, whatever, even if like, I think genuinely there's some cool aspects to it that I was like, okay. Interesting. And it was an unexpected twist. I didn't see that. And I was like, oh, okay. So
no,
it's fine. Right. Exactly. So here's where I think the majority of this film suffers from the white feminism, which is like, when I was talking about this with my partner, I was like, you know, there's only so much that we can like hold people accountable for sometimes. It's like, this is her life, right? This is like her lens that she sees the world, and she has no business telling somebody else's story. But again, that kind of just tattles on her in that, like, this is how she sees the world. This is her lens. Like she really thought she was saying something and doing something. Right.
Yeah. So it was like, so it had never powerful. Been done before. That's like the biggest thing.
And it's such a letdown because you're really you're falling victim to the same issues that we have fallen victim to as a society for generations, for all the waves of feminism that we've had. And so, like, as much as Wilde was trying to say something with this film, her head absolutely in the right place. I see where she was coming from. I think she completely missed the mark. In all the ways she attempted to make this a feminist piece, what she did create was a white feminist place, which is historically harmful to the movement as a whole. Because if we're not trying to liberate all of us, then we liberate none of us. And in that is where, like, a lot of the core issues are. And so here's why I think this is more white feminism than it is feminism as a whole, because the integral part of white feminism is this understanding of things being wrong because they have now become inconvenient to them, right? We see that with Alice. Before, it was fine. It was idyllic. It was wonderful. But now it's a problem because I'm suffering from it. We discussed this at length in our Handmaid's Tale episode. But further, with that limited understanding of injustice, there's concurrently a desire to maintain the status quo just enough to shift the power to them. Because if we dismantle the system completely, then how will they benefit? Right. So we just want to change it enough that we have the power. Wild, in that same interview with Gyllenhaal, explained about the incels that they believe that society has now robbed them, that the idea of feminism is working against nature and that we must be put back into the correct place, which isn't untrue, but is ignoring the nuance of the specific stand. When I see this theme of men are bad, or this anti-feminist patriarchal society, I see one of the barriers of progress in two specific characters. First is Frank's wife, Shelley. And then later is Alice's best friend, played by Wilde herself, Bunny. These two women are the white feminists, which is funny because Shelley isn't. But they're the problem with the feminism in this film.
They're the barriers.
And they're not conveyed that way. That's the problem. Is, like, at least with Handmaid's Tale, we know that the wives aren't good.
Suck.
Yeah. Right? We know that they're a problem and a barrier, right? These two women are supposed to, like, they're not great, right? They're arguably, like, villains in the film. But at the end, we're supposed to feel something about them. Yeah. And that's where I'm like, no. So in the dramatic ending where Alice finds herself fleeing for her life after murdering her husband, when she realizes the truth, Frank discusses how to stop her over the phone before Shelley, his wife, murders him. And the murder is super confusing and completely unfounded.
Yeah.
Because with Alice, we saw the evidence in the slow realization. She has been, like, crying for help this whole film. So Jack's murder felt justified and expected. It was still a weird way that it happened. It's a very intense moment. Again, Florence is amazing. But Shelley's was perplexing. Even more confusing is her whispering to him, "Now it's my turn. Turn to do what, hun? Like, what are you?"
Run the simulation, I guess.
To run victory. Like, are you real? Do you know what this is? Like, for a woman who had, throughout the entirety of this film, praised her husband's brilliance, like, it could have been, you know, out of safety, but she gets aggressive with it. It was unnecessary the way she was super hard about it. And that's goes past just self-preservation. Second of all, she does that. And in just a few scenes prior, publicly scolds Alice for her outburst. So it's a bizarre move for her to murder him because we had no inclination that she felt any type of way. We also don't know if she, like, has come to, and that maybe she is a powerful woman. Like, we don't get the Stepford Wives. We don't learn who all these women were.
Like, no, because the only one that matters is Alice and Bunny.
Yeah. So, we never learn. And it's just like, it has this question of, like, what would she gain except control of this machine? And a machine that she would undoubtedly keep running. And is it that she's going to put the men in there now against their will? Is she going to have it so that ladies can go in there if they want? Like, I don't get her motivation or why she's doing that.
Yeah.
And then Bunny, we learn, has known about the simulation all along. She's in it willingly, and one of the only women to be here willingly, which she tells us in this heartbreaking scene is to be with her kids. Her kids that she spends not a lot of time with.
Yeah,
to be honest, they're not, they're like, even Alice says it, like, her kids like her more, and it's kind of a joke, but it's kind of true. Like, she plays with them once, and she always seems like she's annoyed by them.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it doesn't, it's surprising to have that be the reveal when it doesn't seem like she was there to be a mom. It seemed like she was there to, like, hang out with all these other women who she knows are being subjugated, and she doesn't care.
Yeah, because as someone who's in on the joke, she's a part of the system, and she's a part of the control. It's benefiting her. So why change it? So she knows the truth, the ugly injustice and pain of it, and still works to uphold a system for her benefit. And she degrades the other women if they falter and pushes the narrative hard and more successfully than some of the men do because she's a fellow woman. Because why wouldn't we trust one who's just like us and is trapped here? Right.
Yeah.
And she reminds me of the wives in Handmaid's Tale, or even in the end, she reminded me of Rose from Get Out.
Yeah.
I honestly, I felt like everyone was Rose from Get Out. I was hoping, to be honest, that Jack had a reveal like that. He didn't feel sinister enough. He felt like a dope all the time. And he kind of was. Yeah. Like, he was lost, but it's like, why him? What did the system gain to have? He doesn't have money. He doesn't have intelligence. What did he give to this? How did he get in here? So I guess.
I don't know. Yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah, I was just hoping, because there's not a lot of men.
Yeah.
I was hoping that he would have a sinister turn. That at the end, when she's, like, confessing, and he's like, I loved you, blah, blah, that he would have, like, had to pull the keys out of the purse moment.
Yeah, that's
fair.
What
an amazing scene. And again, there's so many references and things that are referencing Get Out in this film that doesn't get enough credit, because everyone, you know, says it's reminiscent of Stepford Wives. For sure, it is. But so is Get Out. Get Out is also reminiscent of Stepford Wives. But there's specific things. So, like, the breathing, there's, like, this breathing motif in times of tension, which is straight out of Appeal. Like a cinematography book, and just like the way things are framed and shot and revealed. But also I think about the quote from Peel when he mentioned there are no good white people in Get Out, and I think there are no good people in Don't Worry Darling. So when she revealed her truth, at first I was sad to hear about her children, but then immediately I felt betrayed. Like, really betrayed. Because the lengths this woman went to, the harm she knows is being done, and still she maintains the status quo for her own benefit. Like, she was
people
so...
are dead because of her.
Yeah, people are dead because of her.
Literally.
She is so horrible to Margaret and shuts them down, and she controls all the women. That's literally what she's... It's not about the kids. It's that she gets to control the women and be at the top.
She has to have power, yeah.
Ugh. So this is where I come to intersectionality. Never heard of her section of this. Because we already discussed the issues with Margaret's character, who was so quickly dismissed and pushed to the side. And I was incredibly disappointed by her death and the fact that it was the first one. I was like, are we really doing this? And that she became this catalyst for this white woman to then find the truth. Because the truth... from Alice's mouth matters so much more. And in several articles and reviews, I saw mention of Alice being the only one who knew what was going on. It was like, and Alice becomes aware, blah, blah, like, no.
Yeah, they just, like, forgot about her.
It's entirely exactly what the film was trying to do. And I will shout out to Sophia S. Pasalis at the Harvard Crimson for actually saying it out loud in their article, Don't Worry, Darling, Review, a Drama That's Accidentally a Comedy, in which they say, the film centers on Alice, a white woman inspired to question her surroundings by the discoveries of Margaret, a black woman who serves as a catalyst for Alice's character development. Don't Worry, Darling is ultimately an exploration of white womanhood with a half-hearted attempt at inclusion, illustrating a symmetrical experience of femininity that is seemingly possible only between white women. And not even then. And so no one gives her credit for being the first one to notice what was going on or to question things.
Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, the biggest thing for me is that her clues are from Margaret. Margaret starts it all, and she doesn't get any credit for that. And without, like, the film having overt tropes, like, consistent with the magical Negro, like, trope, Margaret is still that. Like, she yeah. doesn't give any words of advice, but she pushes Alice to be something important, which, again, digs yeah. further into the white feminism lens.
Yeah, it's like, it's so, at first I was like, I don't even want to give Olivia Wilde credit for making this point that white women will not listen to black women in the feminist movement. Like, I don't think she knows, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that wasn't her lens. And it's like, it seemingly unintentionally reaches this point where it pokes white feminism, but doesn't do anything with that. And then, like, you think something's happening at first, and then they're like, oh, no, this woman does not matter. Like, and they make that the theme, and it feels super gross. So it makes all the reveals feel really lackluster and like icky, mm-hmm. because they never cared enough about Margaret to give her the same chance as they gave Pugh's character. They never gave her the same care or emotional capacity for growth. Like, they literally just disregarded her immediately, did not give her any chance to be free, escape, or have autonomy. And I, like, as you said, like, if we're going to make a film about feminism, it should not come at the cost of the only black woman in the film. Mm-hmm. And it should definitely, like, if we're not free, unless we're all free. So it was super icky.
Yeah, and for me, it's like Margaret and most likely had been written as a white woman, right?
Yeah.
My name, like, Margaret. But I think that should have been a thought. And that's what got to me, was like, we've said it before. The second that you put, like, a black person in your film, you have to think about that. You have to think about the implications of where you're putting them and the way that they're reacting and what you could be saying, even unintentionally.
Yeah, and they didn't do that.
Yeah. They didn't. And that's giving too much credit. Like, it's being too kind, because it really is horrible. It's an awful thing to have, like, this one black character and their husband to be so, like, especially, like, when we're even talking about incel culture, it's a very white space, right? Uh-huh. It comes almost hand in hand with white supremacy, right? Uh-huh. And so the fact that there was a black couple with a son in Victory is a big deal. And that, by them not even acknowledging that it was a big deal, is a gross, like, just misrepresentation of it, and just, like, a neglect of the world that you're creating. And I wanted to be like, okay, there's not even any queer characters in here, which, okay, because incels are super straight and gross, but, like, at least in Stepford Wives, they had the gay Republican, and they talked about why that was still harmful too. And you could have had, like, the husband was a part of the system. Why? How is he a part of the system? How did he get here? Like, I want to know more about him. And we don't.
Well, yeah, because the characters, like, they were probably originally cast as, like, colorblind is what mm-hmm. colorblind casting. And it's like, you can't do that now. You need to be intentional about what you do with your stuff. Like, you need, if you're going to put them in, you need to have voices there that can help lead that discussion.
I also think, like, she probably thought, like, you know, might have paused when they cast her and they were like, oh, well, that is a character who dies. And then I could see her being like, well, isn't it more racist to not cast her in this role because she would be the first one to die? Like, I could see that logic twisting someone up. Like, I absolutely could see that. It's gross. It's stupid. But
yeah.
I can see her being like, well, isn't it? It's not. Okay. It's racist how it is right now.
Yeah.
Don't do that. So my last little piece, and we're going to you, Kat. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
There's so much to say, and I even going to say all the things I wanted. But there was this other thing that caught me when I first watched it, and, like, the reason I watched it, because it was so silly. And it's that no man comes in this film. And what a win that must be, right, ladies? So I'll say this. Even the white feminism is lacking in this film. The film isn't feminist in the slightest, because as Wilde was proudly advertising that no men come in this film before its release as, like, this badge of honor, she claims it was due to her not seeing enough female pleasure on screen, which, sure, that's true enough. But, babe, this is not the place to combat that. Like, why would you put it in Victory where it's supposed to be bad for the ladies? And you're like, but this place, the ladies get off.
Yeah, which is, like, it's horrible for women. It's like, what do you mean? Like, it's supposed
what are you
to
be
better.
Tell me?
It's better there. Is that what you're arguing?
What are you telling me. So in an article in the Daily Beast titled Harry Styles and Florence Pugh's Sex Scenes in Don't Worry, Darling Make No Sense, writer Esther Zuckerman explains, in the movie, these moments just speak to the confused nature of the allegory that Wilde and screenwriter Katie Silberman have created. If they are making a film about the stifling weight of the patriarchy, why is their heroine having such a good time sexually? The character portrayed by the lusted after pop star is revealed to be a sniveling men's rights activist type who is threatened by his wife's career that he imprisons her, so she quite literally cannot do anything but serve him. So what is he doing serving her?
Yeah. If anything, like, yeah, like the sex scene should be like super lackluster and just like like, was that good for you? When they turn over and they're like, no.
Yeah. Like, are you trying, like, Wilde, are you trying to convince me that incels are so good at sex?
Yeah, they've just been, they just haven't been given the opportunity. They just put me in, coach.
To please women.
Put me in, coach.
They desire to please there. Women. Yeah. And they don't want them to just lay there and take it.
Yeah, but the only no. issue is that they haven't been given the chance, Gabe. That's what she's arguing, I think, actually.
What are you doing, Olivia? So ultimately, it just has me asking, like, what is this film trying to tell us? Men are bad and incels are dangerous. For sure. Agreed. Yeah. The patriarchy and toxic masculinity are harmful, but to who exactly? Because Jack suffers by finally getting a job and pursuing a hobby that he's into, right? And Alice and the other ladies can lounge about in their day-to-day, and it's honestly a sweet deal, yeah. In my opinion. I love the little trolley. I don't have to drive anywhere. I just get to sit around.
Yeah, and get to, like, just bask in capitalism. Like, let's go to the mall and watch this revolving woman sell us bathing suits.
Absolutely. I get to sit at the pool and just lounge. I get to lounge in different places. And it's sunny. It never rains here. Yeah. Unless I wanted it to rain. Like, if you gave me the option to sign up, maybe I would.
It felt very Love is Blind and that they're, like, constantly being forced alcohol. Yes. And, like, this idea of paradise. But they're, like, drunk and on drugs the entire time.
Always.
To cope with this fake reality that's clearly not real, and like they're drowning in it.
Yeah. There's also like the Peggy who's always pregnant. I think that's her name. She is always drinking, and it, like, part of it like could be a dig at the fact that it's supposed to be in the 60s, but it's not. It's in modern times, so I think it was more of a joke that she's not actually pregnant. There's no baby in there. She just is whatever that is. Because imagine if you no. Anyway, the problem is we never see any growth or progress from the other characters until the very end when chaos is erupting and so are the streetlights. Do the women start to question their place? And I'd have peeped something was wrong when Alice said my very unique meet cute was shared by two other women in this very small community.
Yeah.
Why weren't they like, what the?
If what? We're going to make a simulation, at least write different have, NPC like, 20
scenarios. At least.
Yeah. Like, if. D&D exists. Just like start putting some of those in there. Like,
you telling me like these aren't nerds who play D&D or play Baldur's Gate? Stupid. I was like, this is lazy. This is so lazy.
And that's not a knock against Baldur's Gate. I play Baldur's Gate too. It's a fun game, but you should know creatively that there are more than three stories that can exist for your not that many people that you have in the simulation. And you're trying so to not get caught. Like,
you think they're not going to ask each other? It's so sloppy.
Yeah.
And are they real? Like, who's real? We don't even know. So instead, we get a film ripe with gaslighting, not just from the men, but from the women too. And women who are so intent on maintaining the status quo in a world that, again, seems pretty sweet if you could just sign up for it and give consent, that they'd sacrifice the lives of their friends to maintain it.
Yeah, like Second Life is a simulated world in which you can be online and have fun time and not do work. We could do that. That's I think that's what Meta wants to achieve, is that we have a virtual version of our reality. And if like he made that, there are people who would want to do it, but it's because he's making it like this weird patriarchal, racist, capitalistic-y like Fallout time without the bombs taking that all out, that it gets gross. So
yeah, there was like a Reddit discussion about like someone was like, what was the twist? And Don't Worry, Darling. And someone explained it. And then they're like, but the kids are made up. So why couldn't the women also be made up? And then someone responded and was like, this is exactly why like rapists don't just have like virtual sex. Like they go after real women because it's about power. It's about actually controlling real humans.
Yeah.
So and the whole thing is that these are just gross men. So
yeah.
But who didn't even need to be dating. Job of that.
Yeah, they didn't even need to be dating these women to put them in there. You could just have literal serial killers and like kidnappers in this place who just stole a random woman and was like, "You're my wife now" in this simulation. Like, one of them had to be that.
Yeah, at least no. One. I think the woman who comes in last.
Yeah,
because he's like flipping out.
Yeah, like, he's flipping out. Like, he's really like, losing it.
He's unhinged. Something's wrong with him. And she's like shook. Like, yeah. I don't think she knows who he is.
Yeah. So maybe that's what that was. But it was weird. Either way.
Can you tell me about capitalism and the patriarchy and love?
Yeah.
In the time of capitalism, patriarchy.
So the intersection of capitalism and the patriarchy follow two similar themes, property and dominance. In Don't Worry, Darling, we're presented with a reality in which both are flourishing, but at a cost. The price of economic stability and the illusion of the American dream are paid with the sacrifice of feminine autonomy and masculine emotional autonomy. Both are not allowed in the patriarchal capitalism simulation created by Frank. Does he have a last name? I don't know.
He does. I don't remember what it is.
This film, as we've talked about, fails in a lot of ways. But the one thing it does kind of point out is that the social structures of the patriarchy and capitalism work together in this perfect harmony of 40s, 50s, 60s nostalgic bliss in oppressing women and also like messing with men too. Like a lot of them don't seem to be having that much fun, even though they pretend to while they're really drunk.
They have to work so hard.
Yeah. Clearly, like, they're not having a good time either. What we do kind of see is that the only way for true gender equality to be achieved is through the dismantling of all of these systems. To understand this, we need to recognize the harm that both of these social and historical structures do to both groups. And as we talked about, the film really drops the ball on forgetting intersectionality entirely. And how like all of these things are also deeply ingrained in white supremacy and upholding all of those social structures. So it's like, if we're unpacking all of these things, we have to recognize all the intersectionalities that happen within them. Otherwise, you will never fully be free of them, because if we're going to deconstruct one, you have to deconstruct the other, because they do not exist in vacuums. But in an article titled "Capitalism and the Oppression of Women, Marx Revisited" by Martha E. Jimenez, they overview some ways that capitalism and the patriarchy work together to oppress women. Jimenez argues that while Marx didn't focus explicitly on women's oppression, his theories provide a framework to understand how capitalism contributes to gender inequality. In their journal, they discourage oversimplifying the issue by just blaming individual men, emphasizing instead the importance of analyzing the historical and economic conditions and shaping social relationships between genders, that in enforcing and uplifting these flawed systems, both groups are harmed, and that these are both systemic issues uplifted and enforced by individuals, not created individually.
Mm-hmm. It's like toxic masculinity hurts all of us.
Yeah. It's also like racism isn't like just one person being racist. Like you cannot, like everyone's a little,
it's a whole system.
It's a whole system acting independently of you. And that's why you have to do something about it. So similarly, patriarchy and capitalism act independently of each of us. Is it when we uphold it and uplift it and enforce it upon others that it's a problem? So the Marxist feminist thought contends that the intertwined structures of capitalism and patriarchy collaboratively perpetuate the oppression of women within society. Capitalism, driven by profit motives, exploits labor for economic gain, often leading to, for the patriarchal sense, the undervaluation of and marginalization of traditionally feminized work. So anything we see the women doing in this film is deemed traditionally feminized work that they don't want the men doing. The economic system, according to Marxist feminists, exacerbates gender inequalities by reinforcing patriarchal norms that assign women to subordinate roles. The patriarchy as a social system perpetuates gender-based power imbalances, enabling the exploitation and control of women. And within this framework, women are not only regulated to low-paying jobs, but also subjected to societal expectations that limit their autonomy and perpetuate gender norms. Marxist feminists analyze analysis emphasizes the interconnectedness of economic and gender structures, asserting that dismantling both capitalism and patriarchy is essential for achieving gender equality. And Don't Worry, Darling, when we look at Alice's career prior to being forced into the simulation as an entire surgeon, we see the conflict Jack feels in that from his perspective, being regulated to the traditionally feminized domestic responsibilities of taking care of the house while Alice acts as the primary breadwinner is a point of his insecurity. It feels
he's like, I didn't know how to feed myself,
bro. Like, and she's just like, does such a bad job of it. He's like, I didn't eat while you were gone because I just don't even know how to exist without you. And it's like, sir, I worked a 30-hour shift. You can make a meal, friend, even in the simulation. It's like a whole thing.
I don't have my phone in surgery. Like, are you kidding?
It's really just like wild, like how entitled to her time he feels. And like, even before, like even in the simulation, he's just not doing a great job authentically supporting her. And it really kind of reveals the twist for me. Like, it felt honestly like once I saw it, I was like, oh, that was predictable as hell. So
he's not. Yeah, he was never an ally.
No. So, in essence, this fuels his insecurity and is likely the root of why he feels so emboldened by the Incelli podcast and the promises that Frank positions for this world, where he will no longer be harmed by society's view of him as a failure under patriarchal capitalism and instead can bury those feelings, because you can't have feelings under the patriarchy, under all of that power. His motivation is not out of love or even care towards Alice, but out of the desire to be approved of by society, other men, and desired by Alice as a desperate attempt of gaining her adoration, body, and approval that is promised to him by the patriarchy and he feels he is not receiving. He wants this dissected version of Alice who won't call him out when he's doing something wrong. And this is largely because of the social pressures of Western patriarchal society deeming him unworthy if he cannot maintain that place of power. So, to quote Bell Hooks' Love Trilogy, psychological patriarchy is the dance of contempt, a perverse form of connection that replaces true intimacy with complex, covert layers of dominance and submission, collusion and manipulation. It is the unacknowledged paradigm of relationships that has suffused Western civilization generation after generation, disarming both sexes and destroying the passionate bond between them. It's so you don't tell the truth. You can't. It diminishes any power to have any emotional capacity within there. So as I get into it, love and domination do not mix, which is should be obvious, but unfortunately, because of how society and people are socialized isn't, because we're socialized to believe that even if someone hurts you, they still love you. They have what their intentions matter more than their impact. And that's just not true.
That's a way that they love you.
Mm-hmm. So
it's control.
Yeah. So, and Don't Worry, Darling, like the government loves you so much. Look at it. Take care of you by punching down,
taking all your money.
Yep. So, in Don't Worry, Darling, Jack tosses his emotional connection with Alice aside for the promise of power, willing to sacrifice her autonomy and his as well as his ability to empathetically connect, love, or care for Alice in the process. The big reveal that Jack is a part of the whole thing is predictable when you understand his investment in the system, despite his nice guy routine. He performs well in that he performs love, just like he performs that weird dance in the promotional ceremony.
Which didn't make any sense. Why did he do that?
Like, you're showing it's a performance. I don't know. It was very dance.
It was a choice.
But yeah. He performs verbal support and care without actually ever delivering upon actions of that. Instead, actually perpetuating harm towards Alice, despite saying how much he loves and cares about her. So his love is as much of a performance in the simulation as the simulation itself, because he does not know how to act genuine in an ingenuine world. To quote Bell Hooks again, when men and women punish each other for truth telling, we reinforce the notion that lies are better. To be loving, we willingly hear the other's truth. And most important, we affirm and value the truth telling. Lies may make people feel better, but they do not help us know love. So in this, the lies of everything's great, everything's wonderful, you're happy in this world is more harmful than actually, you're never going to connect meaningfully with someone if you're not being your most authentic self. So the scene that stands out to me is the performance of him cooking dinner, where he just does a horrible job of making a meal, like in the simulation. Like, he's trying so hard to just like make her dinner. And as the puppy he is just so desperate for that like bad performance to be enough. He just really wants her approval. And in this article, Psychological Patriarchy and Covert Submission and Don't Worry, Darling, on Flip Screen by Tilly Long, they unpack this nicely, stating, once we kind of see the real Jack, this emasculated, unemployed incel, the real Jack seems to be tucked away in a basement listening to Frank's pseudo-intellectual philosophy of gender base, based on psychological professor and culture war Jordan Peterson, which Gabe talked about. Meanwhile, Alice is a surgeon. A whole surgeon working 30 hours a day and consequently dismissing her boyfriend's sexual advances a bit too often for his liking. In this self-imposed matrix program, Jack can position himself as a provider and breadwinner, addressing a personal crisis of masculinity, perhaps, in order to feel worthy of Alice, while degrading her to the status of a sex object and personal maid. This inevitably doesn't serve him, though, as Jack seems almost as helpless as his wife when confessing he hates the control exerted on him by Frank's system. In particular, the day job he works in the real world to pay for the simulation, he doesn't enjoy. And again, as bell hooks has written, to indoctrinate boys to the rules of the patriarchy, we force them to feel pain and deny their feelings. Patriarchy so blatantly doesn't bode well for anyone here, not even the husbands who appear content to the untrained eye. It is now clear that most of the housewives Alice has befriended are also purposefully trapped in this town by men in their lives, although certainly don't know yet for most of them. So the last piece of this is how love and control, like, don't intermingle. Like, you can't. Mm-hmm. Is that something that Alice says, like, towards the end, is that Jack, like, can't love her. Like, you don't love me because you put me in here. You stole.
Yeah, you don't love me.
Who I was when I wasn't here. Like, my personality. You like pieces of me, sure. As a toy for you. Absolutely. You love
this idea of me.
Yeah. You've manic pixie dream girled me into this time. But the character of Jack cannot love Alice because, again, you can't violate someone and say that you love them. If we are being abused in any way, then we are not being loved. Love is the opposite of abuse and domination. So everyone should just read bell hooks. I'm just letting you know. I'm making it my mission for 2024. So if love cannot exist under domination or abuse, it cannot exist under capitalism or the patriarchy, because love acts in the opposite of those things. And if to be married and be in love under capitalism is mostly a financial exchange, same. Mm-hmm. It's just a bad time. You can't have both. Like, it's really gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my face for that.
Yeah, I think this I think that was well said, Kat, by you and bell hooks. Yeah. and yeah, precisely that. I think that I don't think Olivia Wilde was trying to tell us that Jack loved her or that any of that was like, I, you know, Jack is very much a villain. I think we just didn't give enough credit to the fact that everyone else was a villain too.
Yeah.
And so they were like kind of disguised as victims as well. And I think when it comes to capitalism and the patriarchy and some of those ideals, it's easy to say like we're all victims of it. But when you uphold those systems and you do the work to keep them in place and you're not, you know, acknowledging the harm of them, then you are also like a contributor of that harm. Like, yeah. You become a villain as well.
Yeah. Just because individuals aren't the creators, they are the perpetuators. So
yeah. We allow the system to stay, right? Yeah. And so if you're not doing anything to get rid of the system, then you're part of the system.
Yeah.
And then you're a problem. And so yeah. And I think really all of it, like that was the thing that I was struggling with, is, you know, how much of this is Olivia Wilde's place to say right? Mm-hmm. Like, she can only speak her truth and from her lens, which is why it is what it is, right? And yeah. I think decent enough job for what she did. Well, she's got a lot of mess she's got to go through in her personal life and on screen, it seems. So, but she was trying to say something. Yeah. And maybe we should let other people say stuff too.
That's where I'm at with it as well. We've had this story before. Like, it wasn't saying anything like revolutionary or that new, even though it's positioned as like that being what it was doing, where mm-hmm. we could have had a different movie made by a different person and gotten a totally different lens that I think we both feel is desperately needed. Mm-hmm. And has been done by some people, yeah. but not enough.
Because there was that the Independence Day, July 4th, culture shock. Remember that? Culture shock, which was on Hulu as part of one of their, like, the different, it came out for, like, the 4th of July or whatever.
Yeah.
But that was, like, it was that she was a Mexican woman who was living in a very similar idyllic world.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that now that you're talking about it. Yeah. It did something very similar.
Yeah, and because the whole thing and it's by Gigi Saul Guerrero. I talked to her before. That was this film. Like, not to spoil this film. It wasn't a great film, I will say that. It was fine. But that was the end of what Culture Shock was, but even worse.
Yeah.
Because it was, it was done better because it was such direct commentary and it was told in a very unique way. But it was this twist.
Yeah.
There was a simulation and that was a place of control and power. Is literally this film. So we've seen this film from a different lens, and we could have given her the money, give Gigi all the money, and then, you know, let Olivia Wilde sort out her stuff at home, her issues with Miss Flo. I hope that you enjoyed that. Kat, did you have any last things you wanted to say?
No, I think we said them all.
Close up.
We got that.
We said a lot of words.
This is our back into it time, so.
Yeah.
I think we did a good job for getting back into it.
I hope you enjoy us getting back to our roots of citing sources.
Yeah, I read.
writing a script.
I read JSTOR articles and
philosophical
theories and stuff. Like, it was intense.
Taking advantage of, like, access to academic materials. Yeah. So let us know how you feel about Don't Worry, Darling. Did you like the twist? Have you read the Lamp story on Reddit? Do you have any other cool stories you want to share with us? I love a good Reddit, like, if you know, you watch those videos of the people and they're playing like the Run game.
Yeah.
And the person just, it's like the computer just reads like a Reddit story. Yeah. And I'm here for it, dude.
Reddit has so much creative stuff on it. I feel like there should be movies made from some of these concepts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so let us know, and I hope you enjoy the rest of our New Year, New Me series. It's new us, but it's the same us.
Yeah.
Just maybe something else is happening.
Yeah. New Year, old us. New Year, new us, but old topics, vibes, energies. I don't know.
Whatever, you like
it. I don't know, we're 30.
So don't get married.
Delete your kids. Or
they'll put you in a simulation.
Yeah. You know, simulated
against your will. Like, literally just ask me. If you're like, would you rather, like, not live here?
I love video games.
In Second Life? Yeah. In Second Life.
I'm waiting. This trash body? Absolutely. Sign me up for simulated reality.
My God. I don't have to diet. I just live.
Yeah. I can pick an avatar. That'd be so fun.
Dude.
Like, put me in a pod.
If you're gonna make this place, like, give me powers and stuff. Like, you can do anything. Yeah,
make it a video game, but you don't die. I would love that. That'd be so fun.
You can do anything. Why is this what you choose?
I want to be a
linear, limited thought process. Yeah.
They should make it where it's like you get stuck, a Sword Art Online, you know, you get stuck in like an RPG, an MMORPG. Send me there. That'd be fun.
Level up.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it's such a man, like a incel white men idea to be like, I have technology that can transport your consciousness into a new world, and this is what I make.
Yeah.
This uses the terms America. Anyway, bye.
Bye.